welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Thank you for listening in. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson.
Well, hello, Susan. It sounds like a busy week here. You told me we had three events taking place in theaters in our listening area on November 2nd, 3rd, and 4th.
Yes, and here in the studio, we have with us Karen Niblock, director of Breaking News, the play premiering at the Josephine Tope Community Auditorium Friday. And on the phone, we will hope to soon have playwright Don Zelidis. Welcome, Karen. It is exciting to have you here. But before we begin with Breaking News, we'll give our listeners a quick rundown on what else is happening in various towns in our listening area. Thursday, November 2nd, is opening night at the Ankeny Community Theater for The God Committee. And on the same date, November 2nd, the Story City Grand Opera House is hosting world-class entertainers Monroe Crossing. And if you stay till the end of the program, you'll hear about something else interesting in Nevada from last weekend.
Well, now, Karen, thanks for coming in today. It's good to have you. And tell us about the play. This is Breaking News. Tell us about it.
Well, Breaking News is a brand new play that Don Zelidis wrote. We're really excited about it. It is a commentary on the media and social media today. We did the prequel to this play called The Election 5 years ago. And so when he came out with this show, we were really excited to try it. And the kids have enjoyed exploring how the media affects our lives.
Oh, yes, they are. Very timely. With all the news about Facebook and all the things going on with the election and all those things, because what could be more timely than the character and validity of things in the media in a high school setting? You're doing the high school, and that means you have to have a large cast to involve a lot of students. How many people are involved?
We have 48 students and a crew of 20.
That's good, because you want to involve a lot of people. And some drama teachers tell me that it's a struggle to find plays that have enough characters to involve a lot of students.
That's one of the reasons we like Don's shows so much, is he writes them specifically for larger casts.
Yeah, Don, is Don on with us? Becca's our engineer here, and she's got you on the phone. Don, how are you?
I'm doing great this morning. Thank you.
Well, congratulations on this play. Is this the world premiere?
It is, yeah.
And you're doing it in Nevada.
Yes.
That's fantastic.
Maybe this is off-Broadway, right?
Yeah, this is off-Broadway.
It's a little off-Broadway.
Well, Don, how long have you been at this playwright trade?
Well, I went to school for it and got my master's degree in 2001. So it's, and I started a few years before that, so probably just over 20 years.
And I hear that you're very prolific. How many plays have you written?
I've lost count. I think it is somewhere around 105.
105? I don't think Shakespeare did that. Well, now
ahead of Shakespeare.
Well, your plays are produced in high schools largely, too. Is that correct? I hear you're one of the most produced playwrights in the high school era, right?
Yes. Yeah, there's about 2,000 schools per year do my shows.
That's fantastic. Now, tell us about Breaking News. What's unique about that show?
Well, it's a play about a reporter trying to get to the bottom of an investigation about a student body president. And there are people who believe her, and there are people who don't. And the truth is very complicated as to whether this investigation is actually factual or not. And then it really plays into the media, because there's two competing news organizations at the school, one of which is anti-president, one of which is pro-president. And each news organization has their own followers and won't listen to the other.
Wow. Sounds like a deep, thickening plot. A lot of people want to see that, especially in the context of the post-election year and all the news about the media. Now, how did you locate... Well, what's the relationship here? You and Karen, this is a world premiere. How did that come about, that it happened in Nevada, Iowa?
Well, Karen has done my shows for a number of years. I'm not sure how many, but quite a few. And I was looking for a school that would like to take this on. And I was looking for a school somewhere in the middle of the country, which I thought would be, Iowa is about as middle as you can get. And Karen read it and jumped on it really quickly. So she got the first crack. Wow. I usually don't make a distinction between a large school and a small school when giving out the world premier status. I try to be democratic about it and have schools all over the place.
Well, as a graduate of a small Iowa high school, I really endorse that idea. I really do. Now, Don, where do you live?
I'm in Austin, Texas right now, but I'm from Wisconsin originally, so I'm not too far away from you guys.
So you are a Middle Westerner, too. Now, Karen, what kind of challenges are presented when you do this show?
I think the biggest challenge for this show is just the number of scenes that move from one place to another. We've always been a school that likes to do fairly large sets, and so actually figuring out how to compartmentalize this and make a sleek, modern set has been a challenge for us to move that and to use more technology to move the scenes. So it's been a lot of fun for my crew to figure out how are we going to do this to make distinctions, and we've really enjoyed that challenge, really taken that on. So
now, how long have the students been off the book, as we say in theater?
A month.
That's very efficient to have them off, because I know from my experience in theater, that's when you begin to develop character and understand your character and, you know, embellish what you're doing. It just keeps, once you've got the lines down, then you can play with it. You
know? Well, and that's the whole point, is once the kids know what they're doing, once they connect to that character, then we can really make it our own. And until that happens, there isn't a lot that can happen other than blocking and a few things like that. And so we push pretty hard to get them off book within about 3 weeks of starting.
That can be difficult because in my experience in community theater, a lot of adults are just like Linus's blanket. They hate to leave the book. And that's when the real magic happens, as we all know in theater. When you leave the book and you're just there with that character, and I bet even teenagers are able to really expand on what they do originally and when they get off the book.
You know, it's really cool because Don writes such good dialogue that the kids really want to get off the book quicker. They really embrace it. I have to really compliment you, Don, on the fact that you write as they speak. And so we don't have to really work through a lot of that. And so we've really enjoyed digging into these scenes. We were working on the Principal Weems scene last night after the dress rehearsal, and boy, was it fun.
Oh, that was that sounds like one of the high points of the play, the principal scene.
No, there's many. But that was just one that we were really digging into last night that was just, I don't know, the kids were really playing with it and trying to make it work for them.
Well, now, Don, when you write these plays, is one of your considerations the need for a fairly large cast to be produced in a school?
Absolutely. I write for the professional theater as well, and in the professional theater, you want a cast of about four or five. And it's such a joy to write for a huge cast because there's different topics you can tackle as a writer that you can't tackle with a small cast show. So for a play like this, where it's a satire about society, I can have a crowd on stage. Whereas if I'm writing a play that's meant to be done professionally, where you have to pay everybody a salary, that would be cost prohibitive. You couldn't do it.
So it's really more fun to write like this because you have a lot more flexibility. Is that right, Don?
Yeah, you have complete flexibility. If I want to put someone dressed like a unicorn coming through the stage, I can totally do that.
And, you know, you've got a captive audience. Well, look at the captive audience you have for a typical high school play. A lot of folks are blood relatives of the actors, and they're already in a position to approve what's going on stage. A very supportive audience, right, Karen?
That's true, yes. Everybody's rooting for the play to do well.
We have a lot of fun with it, and Nevada is very supportive. So we anticipate probably 300 to 400 people at each show this weekend.
Wow.
Now remind us when the performances are again, so we don't
Friday night at 7 and Saturday night at 7 p.m. So.
Now, that's at the new. That's a fairly new auditorium there, isn't it?
The community raised over $4 million 5 years ago and built the auditorium. So we're excited to continue to use this amazing facility.
Well, I haven't seen it. So do you have a pretty good, nice, deep stage to work with?
The stage is about 40 by 52. So we had to shorten it and make it a little smaller for this show. But, yeah, we have a great stage.
Is there an orchestra pit, too? For
yes.
See, that's what I really like, because when you have an orchestra pit, you have the opportunity, if you're doing a musical, for instance, for the band and the instrumental music people to be involved as well as the cast. So it's not just vocal department, the instrumental department, too. Very foresighted. And aren't you happy with that facility, the lighting and everything? Up to date, good technology.
It's wonderful. And like I said, we've been experimenting with, there's some cuts in this that are actually done on video. So we've been experimenting with that and how to make that work. And the characters are very rich, which is always nice because then you can really help the students key in on that character and develop that character. So,
but now, Don, when you do writing for, let's say, a high school audience or plays to be produced by high schools, are there some limitations that you really have to consider in terms of kinds of characters and plots?
There are limitations just about community standards. So you can't do some things that you could do in an adult show. But as far as limitations of characters go and stories, not really. As long as you deal with it in a way that respects your audience and keep in mind that these are going to be teenagers performing the show.
And there are some shows, I'm sure, that you've written that are the most popular, that get selected by drama coaches most frequently. Do you have a favorite among the plays you've written? Your favorite, your baby.
I think my recent favorite is a play I wrote called Game of Tiaras, which is essentially Game of Thrones, but with Disney princesses leading the various factions.
Wow. Very
kids
timely.
Really enjoy that.
Well, I'm really glad that someone like you is out there making opportunities for people to produce plays in school environments, and that you're doing things that are more cutting edge and relevant to where students find themselves and in the context of the larger news, the scene going on in America today. Because kids today are so well informed, there's so much social media coming to them that it has to be relevant in a certain way. And that's kind of a challenge compared with, listen, I graduated from high school in 1961, and the plays were a little silly, just plain silly. And, you know, in a way they spoke down to us, you know, the plays that were being written.
Right.
And so it's kind of nice to hear that you're doing some things that challenge the students and the teachers. And, Karen, this is very exciting. Now, I picture your opening night with searchlights darting the sky and a lot of celebrities. Is it going to be a red carpet?
Maybe. I have a couple parents who are in charge of that, so I kind of let them go and they can do what they want. So we'll see.
Well, I just hope the Nevada people don't show up with fashion faux pas that just aren't done on the red carpet because there'll be television cameras and everything. I think this is so exciting. A world premiere in Nevada. And Karen is the drama coach and the person who's going to be running the show. She's the director. And it's so exciting also to have the playwright on board today, Don. So congratulations not only on this play and the concept behind it, but also your tremendous retinue of plays you've been doing. How many years have you been at this again?
About 20.
Well, you're still a young man by my gauge. I'm 74, so you've got a lot longer to go. And God bless you for all you're doing. And also, I'm just dying to hear what is going to be new out of your pen. And I'm sure that one of the leading consumers and first in line will be Karen at Nevada for your new show. Now, once again, breaking news, premiering, world premiere. When, Karen? Give the dates again.
Friday night at 7 p.m. and Saturday night at 7 p.m. in the Nevada Josephine Taupe Community Auditorium.
And there is a remote possibility it may be close to sold out. I noticed that you have a very difficult website to get the tickets. So instead of spelling it out, I just said go to the Facebook page and
right.
And then find a place to click.
Yes.
So if you go to the Facebook page, what is the Facebook? That's for your theater?
Nevada High School Drama.
So if you go to the Facebook page for Nevada High School Drama, all of the ticket information will be there in front of you on your computer.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually be there to watch everyone go down the red carpet on Friday night, and then again Saturday.
Yes.
But you can also get tickets at the door.
Yes, we have plenty of tickets at the door. So,
yeah, that's really good. And it's just been a nice venture into this world today for us, Susan and I, as co-hosts, to hear about not only Don's wonderful work in doing all the plays he's done over his lifetime so far, but also this unique one, Breaking News, which is very timely about the media and all the things that go on in the news business these days, especially relevant in the context of what's happening in our world and in our nation today. So, Don, congratulations for writing this play. It's just a
Thank
fantastic
you.
Idea. And congratulations to Karen and the department, the speech and theater department at Nevada High School, for doing the world premiere of Breaking News this Friday and Saturday in Nevada, Iowa at the high school auditorium, this rather new facility that's going to be enjoyed by all. So, Karen, any closing thoughts about this? Something you want to say to wrap things up about Breaking News?
Well, I want to thank Don again. It's always fun to get to collaborate a little bit and to be the first to try something. We really enjoy your work, and the kids want to tell you how much they enjoy your shows. When I go to pick them, they really often ask what's going on with Don Zelaitis' shows. So
that's fantastic. And break a leg, guys.
Thank you.
It's going to be great. Breaking News, premiering in Nevada Friday and Saturday night. Thank you very much, Don Zelaitis, for coming in, and
Thank
you, Karen. And I really
Thank
appreciate
you.
The opportunity to let everyone know that there's a world premiere in Nevada Friday and Saturday at 7 o'clock. Curtain goes up at 7. You can get any ticket information at
Nevada High School Drama on Facebook.
Good. Thanks, Don and Karen.
In case you just tuned in, this is KHOI Community Radio, Story City Ames and surrounding area. We've just been talking to Karen Niblock, director of Breaking News, which is being performed for the first time anywhere when it premieres at the Josephine Taube Community Auditorium this Friday. Don Zelaitis, the renowned playwright and author of Breaking News, The Election, and other plays for high school students, joined us on the phone from his home in Austin, Texas. We now have Michael Porsche, the director of the God Committee, which will open at the Ankeny Community Theater tomorrow, November 2nd.
Good morning.
There's Michael.
So glad you could be with us. And to begin with, what is the meaning of the God Committee?
The God Committee is made up of doctors, a psychiatrist, a lawyer, a social worker, and they are the ones essentially who decide who gets what organs for organ transplant. In this particular show, we have one heart available, but three perfectly medical equal recipients. So the arguments become then quite personal and just quite heated, and the qualifiers kind of takes over, and it puts a lot of people in the audience in the position of, what would you do?
So the drama actually includes the feelings of the audience.
Oh, exactly. They get sucked into it, whether they really want to or not, because the dynamics of these three people who are waiting for the heart cover everybody else. It's either you or it's someone that you know, so you can identify with these people who are just as necessary to receive a heart. They're just as good people as the other one. How do you determine who gets to live and who gets to die? That's a pretty big responsibility for these people.
This is actually based on a real incident, isn't it?
Sure, there are similar instances, but for the purpose of entertainment and making a script out of it, they have taken some liberties to show just how frustrating it is. And this kind of example doesn't happen as often, but that doesn't make the responsibility these doctors have any less.
I believe that you are producing this in conjunction with the organ donor organization. Could you tell us a little about that?
It is the Iowa Donor Network. They are a nonprofit who is responsible for procuring organs, for promoting organ and tissue donation awareness. And when someone passes and they are an organ donor, the Iowa Donor Network comes in and they procure, they set everything up, and they put the organs and the tissue with the people on the waiting list. So they're instrumental in that.
Had you made connections with them before you chose the play, or was there some personal reason that you wanted to produce this at this time?
Well, a little over 10 years ago, our daughter was killed in a car accident. She was 9 years old, and there was absolutely nothing wrong with her except she got a bump on the head and her brain swelled, and she was brain dead. They approached us about making her available for organ donation, which is something you never consider for your child, and there's so many more things to worry about at that time. I liked how professional they were, how personable they were. They never treated my daughter like a commodity, and they never treated me as a go-between, a barrier to get through to get to this body. And that was 10 years ago, and they've been with me every step of the way. They offer support groups. They offer reach outs, which if something like that would happen to you and you're struggling, they could put you in contact with someone like me who has been there before. And they have been nothing but wonderful to me. I've been doing theater now for 8-9 years. And I came across this script and I thought this is just an excellent opportunity to take these two things that I feel so strongly for and bring them together.
Do you have any follow-up? Do you know anything about who got those organs and how successful the transplants were?
I do. I did at the beginning. I have let it go. They keep it very, very private. If I want to meet any of those families, well, I let the Iowa Donor Network know, and then they reach out to the family. And if one or the other doesn't want to, then the meeting will not be set up. If it is agreed to, then they can set up the meeting. But there are times where I would just like a follow-up. So I reach out to the Iowa Donor Network. They reach out to the family, and I am provided with, I don't know, not a report, but a follow-up with no personal details of where they live. And over time, I've come to allow that even though these are my daughter's organs that are in other people, these people belong to other families, and they should, for my sake, I would like them to focus on their family and not spend their life thanking me for just doing the right thing.
Well, that's a very moving story and reason to produce such a play. What kind of a cast do you have? You have, of course, the three principals who are making the decision. Is it a play that you've enjoyed working on?
I really, really have. One of the biggest struggles overall of directing is to get these group of people on stage to do things the way that you see them in your head. But this cast knew how personal this was to me, so I could actually recognize the extra effort that they've been putting into this, the lengths that they go to really become their character, so that nothing is lost in this portrayal, that everybody who comes to see it understands just really how difficult these things can be. Not just for the families, but for the doctors who, as I said, have to decide who gets to live, which in essence means who gets to die. At the end of each show, we do have members of a donor family or a donor recipient. They spend a few minutes personalizing it, letting you know that these things actually do happen. It happened to me, and they share their story afterwards.
It sounds like a very moving experience. You've concentrated this all in one weekend. Normally you have 3 weekends, I believe, up at Ankeny Community Theater.
It's called the Studio Series. We offer 3 one-act shows throughout the year in conjunction with the regular shows that we do offer. And those shows have gone to 2 weeks instead of 3 weeks so that we can offer the studio series, which are shows that aren't normally seen on the stage at Ankeny Community Theater. Shows with more substance, shows that we are able to give back to the community. Half of all the proceeds and all donations are going to the Iowa Donor Network in this instance. So it's just a way of the community theater giving back.
Well, Michael, this is Paul Wearson. I'm a co-host with Susan. Just closing out here, just remind everyone when your opening night is and how many nights it runs and where the Ankeny Community Theater is.
Sure. The show runs Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night. The doors open at 7, shows at 7:30. There is a matinee on Sunday at 2, doors open at 1:30. The Ankeny Community Theater is at 1932 Southwest 3rd Street, Ankeny. There's even a little tab on our website for directions. I know sometimes things aren't always easy to find.
Thank you for being on, and best of luck with your play. It was great to hear the reasons and backgrounds for why you picked the play and the significance of the show and how it's going to be very enlightening and very, very revealing to the folks who come and sit in the seats that night. So good luck with your show.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much for having me on.
This is KHOI Community Radio, Story City Ames and surrounding area, visiting with the directors of two plays opening this weekend. For the second half of the show, we'll visit the owners of two historic Story County theaters. First is Larry Stone of the Talent Factory in Nevada, formerly the Camelot, which is, I couldn't tell whether the Camelot was actually, goes back to 1928. Anyhow, it's just short of a century. And keeping the lights on and the maintenance sometimes requires a lot of innovation. Halloween was especially busy this year. And Larry, are you there to tell us about it? About
your big... I am.
Great. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. And why don't you tell us all the things that happened on Halloween and what has been keeping you up since?
Well, the first thing that happened, of course, was we had the Scary Macabre Ghostly Stories storytellers in.
Yeah, we had one of those here. Don Begley came in on Monday, and so we've gotten a little preview of what you were doing there. So what's next?
We've been very busy. We've been doing a couple of shows a week. But the biggest thing that probably has happened to us is the filming of a Verizon 90 television series called Play by Play. And basically, they came in and took over the theater and the street and remodeled the theater for the show to make it match the show. So we had film crews, we had producers, directors, actors, and of course all the technical crews that go along with that. It's a fabulous series. We really enjoyed working with everybody. They were great.
Now this started after the big weekend, right?
Yeah, they actually came in on Sunday and did all the set design and setup of everything, then brought in the film crews and the cast on Monday. So on Sunday they came in, I think they were there by noon, and finished about 11 o'clock that night. It was a long day. And then Monday was even longer. We got in there at 11 o'clock, and I got home at like 1:30 in the morning. It was a great day of filming and really educational as far as, you know, seeing what happens in back of the scenes and the multiple takes they have to do and all the angles they deal with. It was an incredible experience.
Why did they choose the Talent Factory?
Well, we were very fortunate and had made a connection with John Busby, who was very involved in the Iowa Rose Film Festivals and Iowa production, who John's job is a location manager for the production company. And we had met him a few years ago when Cindy and I were invited to a test viewing of a film called Marshall's Miracle. And we hit it off really well. John's a great guy. We had similar interests. And when this came up, of course, they're filming this in Des Moines. They used Roosevelt High School as their center. This is an Iowa-based series. And the story basically is about an aging sportscaster who's reminiscing about his youth and his coming-of-age days. And he kind of narrates part of the story along the way. It's a very funny show. They needed a theater because, of course, everybody in their youth at some point has gone to a theater with hopes of making out or stealing their first kiss. And so they needed a theater that was reminiscent of the 90s. And, of course, our theater was very active in the 90s.
It was a movie theater at the time.
Yes, that's exactly right. And they were showing two films, one film, Seven, and the other, How to Make an American Quilt. So the character in this, Pete Hickey, was taking a girl to the theater for the first time. And so John Busby, of course, thought of us and recommended us to the production company, and they came up. The whole thing was actually very quick. They came up a week ago Monday and looked at the place, said, yes, this is it, and then had to make arrangements with the city for the street shutdowns and the parking and the whole nine yards. We're very fortunate to have been involved in it.
Sounds like it. And where can people see this movie?
Well, you can go online and you can Google play-by-play Verizon 90, and it'll bring up all the episodes. They've completed their first season. Their option got picked up for the season 2 and 3. So I think the episode that we're doing is actually going to be in season 3. It should be a great show. I think everybody would enjoy it.
But that sounds like it's going to be down the line a little bit.
I would guess the show will probably be in the 2018 year. When this episode comes out. So. And, of course, last night, with John Busby helping us, we ended up having dinner with Lance Burton, of course, one of the megastars of Illusion in Las Vegas. So we had dinner last night with Lance. And they're coming in today to tear down and clean up all the mess they made over the weekend.
It sounds like you're going to have a few days to recover before you go on the 4th, right? You have a gig on the 4th at the Talent Factory.
We do. We've got the Talent Factory regulars. We're going to be doing vaudeville and songs from the 20s, 30s, and 40s, and some old jokes and kind of take the theater back to its origin in vaudeville theater and the new phenomenon they had coming out at the time, photo plays, which, of course, we know as movies.
Well, actually, that's something that I wanted to ask you about, the evolution of the Camelot / Talent Factory. Some old theaters are brought back as movie theaters, and we did a series on that some time ago. But the Camelot is taking a different road. Isn't that right?
Yeah, originally the theater was built in the 1920s, and it was built for vaudeville and theater. And so the acoustics in the building are fabulous. And it stayed doing that, as it was called the Circle Theater. And then the same family ran it for 40 years until the early 70s. And that's when Friedley Theaters came in and turned it into a movie theater only. They didn't have any of the variety shows or anything that the Circle used to have. The theater then came up for sale in early 2002, when Friedley Theaters deeded it back to the city because they weren't going to compete any longer. And then it went through a lot of different changes, and in 2012, Cindy and I bought the theater and brought back the live entertainment. So we've had an absolute ball doing this. It's been great fun.
Well, it's always good to hear the exciting things that are happening in our listening area. Thanks for coming in today, Larry.
By the way, Larry, I'm the co-host with Susan. I want to compliment you, too, for being very inventive and bringing a lot of great stuff to the Camelot Theater. I understand you had Louis Anderson, too, didn't you?
Yeah, we've had Louis Anderson. We've had the Temptations Review with Nate Evans. We've had Tonic Solfa. Billy Dean, if you're into country. We've had some of the best talent in the country.
That's really remarkable. I saw that. I was in Nevada. I saw a sign, Louis Anderson, and I thought, that can't be happening in Nevada. Well, but it was.
Yeah, Louis's a great guy. He's so easy to work with. At no time working with Louis did it feel like it was a business arrangement. It just felt like we had an old friend come in. And he was incredibly funny. He was a huge hit.
Yeah, so many people in the entertainment world are so professional. When I was in college, I was program director of the radio station. So at Luther College, people like Peter, Paul, and Mary and folks who played there, I had to take care of them while they were there. And they were professional. They did long rehearsals. They treated their performance at Decorah, Iowa, as if it was a large venue. And they were very, very nice people. There are only two famous folks that I dealt with that I don't like, and I won't mention their names. For the most part, all these folks were wonderful. I'm not surprised to hear that Louis was fun to work with, too.
Yeah, everybody we've had in, we have not had a stinker, so to speak, yet. Everybody has been just very friendly, and we usually get to spend some time with them, spend a day or dinner with them, and Louis was just fabulous to work with. He gave me his personal number and his email so that we call him from time to time. And if we have a question, Louis is huge to help and just really a great guy. Love the guy.
Well, Larry Sloan, thanks for being on today and telling us about all the things that go on at the Camelot Theater in Nevada. And we're going to, I'm sure, be amazed by future engagements by folks from so many different venues of the entertainment industry. Thanks for bringing that to Nevada and Central Iowa. Thanks, Larry.
You're most welcome. The Talent Factory appreciates talking to you guys and everything you do for the community. So thank you very much.
Well, that was Larry Sloan from the Camelot Theater in Nevada. And it was just truly fascinating today. This is quite a varied program. I have to congratulate Susan Franson for putting this together. First of all, we've had the wonderful premiere coming up in Nevada for Breaking News at the high school. And we actually had the playwright on today. And then we had the Ankeny Community Theater production coming up with so many wonderful ramifications for the organ transplant industry and the director's marvelous talk about his relationship with the organizations that handle transplants. And we just had Larry Sloan, who's got all this exciting stuff going on in Nevada. What a varied program. And I think we have Todd Thornton on the phone.
But just a minute. We'd like to play a little of Monroe Crossing to welcome him in.
That is the music that's going to be featured Thursday night at the Story Theater in Story City. This is Monroe Crossing.
Hey, folks. We're the Monroe Crossing Bluegrass Band coming to you from the Brentrup Heritage Farm in Maplewood, Minnesota. We took the name Monroe Crossing to pay tribute to Bill Monroe, who is the father of bluegrass music, and we all met because of bluegrass music, so we had a Monroe Crossing.
Been sailing around the sea of life, you ever heard the wind been blowing? It's like a dull edge of a knife, always right but never knowing. It's a mixed up world, you know it's true. Spin right around you like nothing you can do. It's easy to get lost when you don't know where you're going. Thank you. race is facing up, and you know you should be folding.
Todd, you're there. Good. This is Paul.
Hi, Paul.
We're just playing a little bit of Monroe Crossing, and as Todd is manager and owner of the Story Theater and Opera House in Story City, and Todd, you have an event coming up Thursday night at the theater. Tell us about Monroe Crossing and the performance Thursday.
Well, Monroe Crossing, they came through here 3 years ago when we had our 100th anniversary, and they are a bluegrass gospel band out of Minnesota, and we had four different shows that year. If all of you remember, we had our 100th anniversary. We had four different things throughout the year, and they were one of them. And I guess they were going to be coming through the area this weekend, and so they had got a hold of me last spring, and they wanted to make a return engagement to the theater on November 2nd. So I said, sure, let's do it.
Well, I hope that's going to be a lot of fun. Now, this is a group that's fairly well-known in bluegrass, is that right?
Yes, they are from Minnesota, and they're actually members of the Minnesota Music Hall of Fame. They were inducted in 2007. They have put out 14 CDs to date, and they were named in honor of the father of bluegrass music, Bill Monroe.
Oh, that's where the term comes from.
That's how the five members got, I guess they put their heads together, and that's where the Monroe Crossing name comes from.
So periodically you have these fundraisers, and you might explain the foundation there that you have going. How does that
work?
Well,
I kind of started it when we did the anniversary year, and these live shows, of course, we still have movies every weekend, but I've done these live shows and would like to do more of them, and I've got a separate fund that I use for that, and it's the Historical Foundation, Story Theater Historical Foundation. So all the proceeds go into that fund, and it's kept separate, obviously, from the regular operation of the theater.
Now, to reiterate for our audience, the Story Theater has been open continuously since 1913. Is that right, Todd?
That's correct, yep.
And the history of it is, it's been, how many families were involved? I know the Peterson family was there since, what, World War II until the 90s, right?
Right. Dick and Virgil Peterson and their folks came in 1946 and operated the theater until I took over in 1983. So I've been doing it now since 1983, so I'm coming up on, I can do the math, that's about 34 years. So
you can't be that old, that's impossible.
Doing it, we kind of combined for over 65, 67 years of the whole operation have been done by just two families. But
well, I knew Dick Peterson well, and I remember when he was putting together all the data and background necessary to establish it as a national landmark? What's the term?
Right. He went did all the research back in the, on the National Register of Historic Places, and there, of course, had to be a lot of grant writing all paperwork done, and he spent 2 or 3 years compiling all the research and sent it in, and we've been listed on the National Register of Historic Places, so thanks to all his work. He went through all the old Herald volumes and found everything that played at the theater.
Yeah, that fascinated me. He showed me that binder.
Yeah.
It had a playbill for anything produced in the theater since 1913. We had wrestling matches.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, the famous Babe Bisignano, the restaurateur of Des Moines, once boxed on stage at the Story Theater.
Yeah. a lot of history, a lot of stories to tell about the theater. And Paul, you've been so gracious to it. We've kind of done some tours in the past, and you've always been such a great advocate of the theater. So,
oh, yeah.
But I appreciate you having me on. But, this Monroe Crossing is it's exciting to have them back. It was when they called and wanted to come, they enjoyed so much being on the historic stage that they wanted to come back. So,
yeah, I remember we did a presentation to a tour bus at one time that visited Story City and turned out to be the Paul and Todd Dog and Pony show.
Yeah.
We talked about the theater. And
well, if we have that happen again, I'll definitely call on you.
Oh, I'll definitely be back because I believe not only in your theater, but all the theaters that we've featured from time to time here on Local Talk. And so many people are so valiant in these communities to put together volunteer organizations and support groups that involve lots of people. But you are running that theater as a business, as it's always been run. And that's just a very valiant effort on your part. That's why I'm really supportive of not only this thing you've got going on Thursday with Monroe Crossing, but also the whole idea of first-run movies in a small-town theater. And it's such a great place to do shows, too. Every year in the spring, we have the Judge Story Theatrical Group, the local community theater, put on very big shows, My Fair Lady and Carousel and things like that. And then you have your special presentations like Monroe Crossing. And, you know, really, for a long time, the performance aspect of the stage was dormant. Tell us about that. Was that in the 1980s you got grants to reevaluate and redo performance?
When it first opened, there was silent movies and vaudeville. Vaudeville was kind of the backbone back in the first 20 years or so, and then of course vaudeville phased out in the late 20s and the early 30s. Well, the last major renovation in the theater was in the early mid 30s when they added the canopy and the box office, and they took the terraced floor out and sloped it and put new seating and everything in. So when you step into the theater now, you're taking a trip back to the 1930s and 40s. So, but the stage was shut down after, they used to do school plays and graduations, and even church services were held there periodically. The stage was closed down in the late 20s, early 30s, and a few things were done through the 40s, but then it pretty much was dormant. And so in 1988 was our 75th anniversary, and Dick Peterson and I put our heads together and thought, well, how much work would it be to put the stage back? And one thing led to another, and we worked for over a year getting the stage back up and operating with the basic lighting and sound package, and with some help from the guys down at the Iowa State Center and my guys from Des Moines at the Midwest Cinema. And it was a long process. We had the whole building rewired and just kind of getting everything back to where you could actually walk out on stage and do something. It turned out, it worked out well. We put the new red Austrian fold curtain that's in there now that people love to see when they come to the show. We're still at it today.
No, I think it's been a real addition, because in the days that I was growing up, it was strictly a movie theater. And, of course, my mother was class of 1925 in Story City, and she talks about watching silent movies there and, sitting with her girlfriends waiting for Rudolph Valentino to do the kiss and the Sheik, you know. And she mentioned a couple that always sat up on the right side, and the husband was illiterate, and he could not read the subtitles. And so the wife was reading them to him, but not just cheek to cheek. She was shouting it, "Head him off at the pass!" And there was always a piano player up on the far left and playing the piano for the silent films. And so whenever I go in there, I just think of my mother attending those silent movies back in the 20s and all the things that happened on stage before it became strictly a movie theater. And actually, it was my pleasure to play Henry Higgins in My Fair Lady on that stage in 1998. So it has deep and fond memories for me. And I think that can be said of all the theaters we featured here. We've been up to Webster City and Boone, and we've been to Nevada. And it's fabulous how people, through the value they have of growing up and watching films and seeing shows, that they have a real identity with that theater. And I think you'll see that Thursday night, Todd, when your crowd turns out.
Show's at 7, and doors open at 6:30, and tickets will be available at the door. And, So, but yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, there's so many. When I was booking this back in the spring, you kind of, you know, hope and you hope that there's not too much else going on because, you know, as you know, Paul, in a small town, everybody is busy practically year round with so many activities. So, you know, there's always something going on. But these are types of things that I hope to do periodically throughout in the future, and with our new digital production, projector we've got now for the movies, we can do some different things a lot easier than we used to with film. So, and that's been in place now for about a year and a half. So, we're back up and up to standards, so to speak, with this, with the movies. And you know, the stage is still a little it's rustic, but it's got character just like the theater itself. And so it's pretty special that you know, the people come back from, you know, they haven't been there for a while, and they step in and they remember it just like they, you know, it was when they were young. So they remember it like it was.
Well, Todd, that's certainly me in that category. Todd Thorson with the Story Theater up in Story City, Iowa. Thursday night at 7 o'clock, Monroe Crossing, a great and well-known, that's grassroots music, mountain. But what's the word I'm looking for?
Bluegrass, yes.
Yeah, bluegrass.
They're going to blend in a little bit of gospel in there, too. And,
yep, I had a senior moment there. Yeah, bluegrass music, and it's going to
be... I've got people coming from... they're coming from... I've got a lady coming from Colorado who's coming to visit her mother. I'm bringing her, and there's some people from Webster City and Marshalltown. And so,
yep. These are bluegrass devotees, so good luck.
And
7 o'clock.
Yeah, and
very,
we ought to
very
give,
well known.
We ought to give just a little note. If you want to buy your tickets in advance, there's a slight reduction in the price. We can't talk about those details, but...
We're getting really close to the show. Just call one of those phone numbers that you see on the information, and we can set up a time to get your tickets to you.
Very good, Todd. Todd Thorson. It's going to be the Monroe Crossing grassroots music.
Let's
so
have
much...
another little sample. Yeah. This is my favorite.
Let's play a little more.
Favorite song. That
thanks
I...
again, Todd.
Okay, thank you, guys.
From Akron to Hinckley, from Privy to Shane, they are soldiers and lawyers, and I believe what they're saying. And I'll rouse them at 4 and head down the line. My hobos are sleeping in the roundhouse tonight. Good night, my hobos, rest your vagabond head.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I have been your host today, Susan Franzen, with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Thank you for listening. Thanks. Earlier in the show, we heard from Karen Niblock, Don Zelaitis, Michael Porsche, Larry Sloan, and Todd Thorson. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m., here on Local Talk at 89.1 FM. Also, remember that you can also hear us online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org.
And remember that today's show was engineered by Rebecca Reuter. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Hobos, a selection by Monroe Crossing. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. So come in and join the Local Talk team.
Stay tuned for Democracy Now! With headline news at the top of the hour. Morning Masterpieces will follow at 9 a.m. let us know what you think. You can call us at 515-292-2878, email us at khoiradio@gmail.com, or go to the contact page of our website, khoifm.org. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and
we'll see you again on the radio. Funding for KHOI Radio is provided in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. We encourage you to shop local this holiday season. You can support Ames growth while enjoying the wide array of local shopping and dining experiences that Ames independent businesses offer. From the Ames Chamber of Commerce, happy holidays. Let's shop local and grow Ames.
Support for KHOI comes from Stevens Auditorium, presenting Rebirth Brass Band from the French Quarter of New Orleans to Ames, Iowa, on Thursday, November 2nd at 7:30 p.m. More information can be found at center.iastate.edu.
Support for KHOI comes from Mary Greeley Medical Center, providing inpatient and outpatient services on a continuum of care, located at 1111 Duff Avenue in Ames. Find out more information at www.mgmc.org. That's mgmc.org.
I'm gonna call the hell.